Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is a stand-up comic with a funny and compelling story to tell about being in a biracial lesbian couple and trying to adopt. She's telling it on stage starting tomorrow night at Stage Works in the Mission District here in the city. It's called Children Are Forever, All Sales Are Final. It runs through March 22nd on Friday and Saturday nights at Stage Works. Julia Jackson, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thanks for having me,
man. Hey, the description of your show reads, "Did you know some kids are discounted? A black baby, which is what Julia and her wife are seeking, costs one half of a white baby."
Mm-hmm.
Why is that, Julia Jackson?
You know, adoption is like any other business. It's driven by market forces. And the people that can afford, right, to have a baby generally are Caucasian.
And want a Caucasian baby.
Right, which is fine. I'm not slamming that. But they just, you know, that's what drives it. And so there's a premium to be paid for that. And to the extent perhaps people of color have fertility problems or they want to adopt, they just don't have the resources. So the children of color going to sit longer. And so, you know,
are there more of
this.
Them? There are more white people. Maybe.
I don't know. But it's
lesbians
business.
For a long time, it's been known that lesbians and gay male couples mm-hmm. will take the babies of color.
Yes. And participate in the foster care system at higher percentages.
And participate at they do in the foster care system?
I think they're more willing to go there, yeah.
Why do you think that is? Because we're other and we understand other?
I think that's part of it, and we don't have accidental babies. There's a lot of thought and intention that goes into it. People really...
If we want a baby, we're going to have to work at it.
We're going to work at it. Which is not to say we're perfect parents, but we're certainly intentional parents. And
we're not saying like, oops, I got pregnant.
Oops. That's not really happening. Yeah, oops, I just paid $100,000 to a surrogate.
Babies that are adopted or people who accidentally got pregnant.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Or don't want the kid or can't raise the kid or various other issues going on.
Right.
And so they're half price. I mean, it's just a funny way that you wrote it in the press materials. Some kids are discounted, like, get your baby half price.
Right. We got to move some product. It's terrible. You have to, you know, I was talking to someone about solo performance in general, and you have to interject some humor in solo performance. Are people going to go out there and slit their wrists after a show? You know,
absolutely.
So you're making light of something that's, in fact, entirely unfair. So this is the story of
the play. It's a 90-minute play, and it's a solo play with many characters, mm-hmm. and it's the story of how you and your partner adopted or tried to adopt mm-hmm. and then did adopt mm-hmm. and succeeded eventually.
But I'm not giving anything away.
Well, we don't want to give everything away. We want people to go to see the show, but you went through quite a lot of drama.
Yeah.
And always when there's drama, there's got to be comedy, right?
There's a story and there's comedy, absolutely.
But you went through a lot. You made some mistakes. You did some things you might have done differently.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, but you do now, you have a son.
I do.
And he's 5.
He just turned 5 and he rode a bike for the first time tonight, so.
He rode his bike for the first time tonight?
He did. I was in
tears.
That's
a moment,
Mama
man.
Was crying before I came up here to the show. I said, he's not a baby anymore.
He's going to ride away from me on his bike.
Yes, he will. As long as he takes care of Mama, that's what I want.
So, your wife is white.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're a biracial person who's in a biracial marriage.
Yes.
And is he black? Is he white? Is he biracial?
My son is African-American.
Is African-American.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, what's it like? What's that been like to have a son? And, you know, what are the challenges you face?
Oh, you know, the challenges...
Are they just like everybody else's parenting?
Yes,
or
plus. Problems plus, right?
That's right. Yes.
I think... Any queer family, first of all, you know, there's no boundaries. People feel entitled to ask and say damn near anything to you as a queer family, first of all, much less a...
Like what? What do people feel entitled to say? You mean just stumbling into...
Did you adopt him? How'd you get pregnant? You know, just your open season when you're an other, right? They wonder, did you adopt? And this happens to queer families, you know, regardless of the race of the child. They want to know, like lesbian couples, for example. Who carried him? How'd you do it? You know, just really...
Who impregnated you?
Exactly.
Was it a sperm donor? Did you do in vitro?
And they don't think there's anything wrong with the questions. And, you know, it's like if this was a straight couple, you wouldn't look at them and say, so, did you do a doggy style? How did it happen? You know, but I think it's a sense of entitlement. Like, we all have questions.
You know what
life,
it is?
But,
it is an entitlement. Yeah. You know what I think it is? What? I think it's that it's so mysterious and it's so confusing and it's so difficult for them to comprehend that they're just so curious.
I think that
so many people are so curious about so many aspects of gay life, and they really want to ask, and they don't have good boundaries maybe about it or respect.
Here's where I'll disagree. I think that explains the questions, kind of like a CNN scroll running into your head. But it's the asking of the question, for me, that shows the entitlement.
So they don't ask permission before they ask
the
question.
No, they do not. I mean, we all, let's say we have a straight couple and we meet the husband for the first time. You may, in your mind, of course, be thinking, wow, look at this house in Pacific Heights. I bet they make a lot of money. You're not going to ask that question. You may look at the husband and say, he looks pretty well endowed. You are not really going to ask that question, right? Because you have boundaries and you know better. But with queer families or anyone that doesn't fit the bill, that question will come.
People
right
just blurt it out.
People say ridiculous stuff. And like I said, my son is not only African-American, he's what I call presenting like dark-skinned African-American, whereas people think I'm Latina or white. They don't know what's up with me. But with him, it's like, was it international adoption? Only white people ask me that question.
Is he from Africa?
What do black people ask you?
They don't.
They don't.
Are you having a nice day? How old is he? Nice to see you. They don't ask me that stuff.
They don't. That's funny that it's only the white people that ask.
That ask, right. I'm not saying it's always a picnic with other black folks when my partner's with me or if she's alone with him. You know,
what is that like?
You know,
I mean, we got Modern Family as one of our top sitcoms. I mean, really?
Yeah, really.
And even in San Francisco, right? You're talking about...
Heck yeah. But mostly, I think where it's coming from is they just want to make sure little man's okay. That he's being honored, respected, and raised the right way.
The white people or the black people?
The black people.
Yeah, they want to make sure he's being raised black to respect and love
they
himself
make,
as a black person.
That's the best way I can dress that up. Now, how it comes out is something else. We were at a stoplight once in San Jose, I think, and there was a guy in the median, you know, he was a homeless guy who happened to be African-American, and the window was down. And he said, hey, don't forget, you are a king.
To your son?
Yep, right through the window, when he was two. So I'm like, don't talk to my child.
Yeah, excuse me.
Going through me.
Or as I say to all the homeless people, please don't talk to me, I don't know you. Which I started with the word please, and then I say something that they can't argue with. Please don't talk to me. I don't know you. And they don't ever say anything after that, because there's what can you say to that? So, all right, well, we're getting off the topic. But.
Yeah.
So in this story, you put in your letter, this is what you say in your publicity. I don't want to give any of the story away that you don't want to give away, because we want people to see the show. I'm talking to Julia Jackson here on Out in the Bay. Her show, Children Are Forever, All Sales Are Final, opens tomorrow night at Stageworks in the Mission and runs through March 22nd on Friday and Saturday nights. You can find out more at juliajackson.com. You put in the Dear Birth Mother letter.
Yes.
That you are a recovering alcoholic. Why? And what was the effect of that?
In the piece,
in reality, whatever you want to, however you want to go with this.
Yeah, I would say that part is factual. I'm out as a recovering alcoholic as well as being out as a gay woman. And there's always consequences in life for being out, whatever your thing is.
And out in
life, you know.
As a gay person or as an alcoholic.
Yeah, whatever. Being yourself, that's what we'll call being out, right? There's always going to be consequences.
Being authentic.
Correct.
Being truthful.
Yes. And so people are going to take that how they're going to take it, but you're free and you're unapologetic about who you are. I remember, I'll say this, you have to do a home study when you're going to adopt. And the social worker comes to your house, make sure you're not a serial killer, all that good stuff.
A hoarder.
Right. And, let's just say I left a recovery book out on the table. I wasn't even thinking about it. And she's like,
And what's this about?
Well, she asked me...
In a tasteful way.
Did you... She said, did you ever get treatment? In other words, you know, go to rehab or anything like that? No, because I didn't. Then she saw the book. She's like, what's up with that? I said, well, I'm sober. I just
was she black? Are you doing her voice?
No, that's just me. Her attitude was very black. let's put it like that.
What's up with that? That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, come on. I'm sorry.
So, you know, and I think a lot of people, that's a judgment call for everybody. how much they want to share about that part of their life. For myself, like in my workplace, for example, I work at a place with about 700 people. I'm out as a sober person. And it's been very rewarding over the years.
Because you met other people and you've been able to be...
Well, people will come up to you after a while and be like, I have a friend.
Yeah, they want help.
Who needs help or, you know, so I've been able to impart good things to a lot of people just by being, not proselytizing.
10 times more people in this country have drinking problems than are in AA. At least 10 times.
You're probably right. Yeah, but I'm not a teetotaler. I mean, I don't get in people's face. It's
right,
just,
I understand.
I say it.
But what was the effect of you putting that in the Dear Birth Mother letter when you were trying to adopt?
That's in real life, that wasn't part of that letter. In the show, it's part of the...
I see. It's so you put that in as a device.
Yeah, yeah.
And what happens in the show?
I can't tell you that. You got to come see the show.
You're on the
people.
Radio show. What? I'm up. Okay, that's it. You're never coming back. No, we want to know the whole show so we don't have to go and leave, right. Leave our homes. And
why not? I'll put the whole thing on YouTube, Marilyn, for free. Everyone can watch it.
Welcome to now. Mm-hmm. Julia, that's really true. So let's do a little bit of the show. How about that? How about if we share a little bit of what are your characters with us?
All right.
What do you want to start with?
You know, actually, I would like to start with one of my favorite characters from the show, which is the birth grandmother. So this is the woman whose daughter is considering placing her child for adoption.
The birth grandmother, the birth mother's
yes.
mother.
Yes.
This is Julia Jackson here on Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman, and her show opens tomorrow night at Stageworks. Children Are Forever. All sales are final. Julia Jackson here on Out in the Bay.
Hurry up, baddie. How long do it take you to find a glass for your beer anyway? How many years you been coming to my house, girl? To the left of the sink, over the napkin holders. No, not for me. I prefer to drink my tall boys right out the can, thank you very much. Keep them colder longer. That's what I'm talking about. I like cold beer, hot pizza, and American Idol. And you messing up that equation, come on! I know it's TiVo, but I want to get going. I know Simon got something evil to say. No, Trina not here. She at the hospital. Baby coming. Mm-hmm. Girl, baby girl. Oh, I don't know. Otter name is Sodom and Gomorrah, that's what. Gonna be growing up with some gays out in California. That's a damn shame. Mm-hmm. No, two women. One of them is, the other one's white. Pray with me about it. She won't even talk with me about it. She could have picked anybody else, Betty. You know I was in her room last week looking for my People magazine. You know she steal my magazines, right? And I seen the picture book from the adoption agency. Had all kind of nice Christian couples wanting to be mamas and daddies. Oh, but no! Trina got to go and be different. As usual. And that is Letty.
That's Letty, the birth mother's mother.
Yes.
Now, is that true to life? Or there's some truth in that?
Yeah,
Birth mother? Do you know the birth mother?
Now, see, those are the kind of questions we don't ask in real life. I would just say that this birth...
I'm sorry.
That's fine. Birth mothers, birth families are rather stealth. You know, when we think about adoption in this country or anyone else, we focus pretty much exclusively on the adoptive parents. That they are just the most fabulous, wonderful people that are saving these poor babies. And I have a line in the piece, I'm not an angel, I just had fertility problems and a good FICA score. That's what an adoptive parent is. You know, I say he saved me. You know what I mean? We just don't see birth mothers, birth fathers, birth grandparents, because they exist. We just don't think
about
them.
We don't talk about them.
No, we don't.
It's never the focus. It's in the shadows.
Right. I remember that, I'll say this, initially, you know, we were looking through foster care. And when you're looking at the profiles, there's issues about communication and staying in touch. And I remember that there was a grandmother involved. And I realized it had never occurred to me that the child has a grandparent. And I started thinking about how sad. Can you imagine, you know, you live your life, things happen in life, and your child... struggles, and then they have a child, and that's your grandchild.
But, and you never know them, or you maybe.
Well,
don't.
maybe, but like foster care is the kid's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. Something happens, and there's a placement, and because they're elderly or whatever, they can't do it. But then they're sort of at the mercy of whoever is adopting the child. And I just thought that was quite sad. Like, can you imagine? Hmm. That's it. They're gone. Maybe, maybe not, but you're powerless. You know, you're really in a prone position as a grandparent. So I enjoy doing all the characters and bringing them to life.
And you also do your partner, it turns out. You actually do your partner or a facsimile of your partner.
Not even a facsimile, boy.
How does when she I feel about that?
Well, it's funny you brought that up because the first iteration of this piece...
which was directed by W. Kamau Bell.
That is correct.
Who was our San Francisco homegrown comic who did his show, W. Kamau Bell Curve. And went on to New York where Chris Rock saw it and turned it into this, the Black Daily Show, I like to call it, Totally Biased, which just got canceled but did two good seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kamau directed the first version.
Yes, he did. He did. And so the character of my partner, though entirely fictitious, she's kind of mean. I said, that's not you, baby. It's not you. But I needed to...
It's just art.
Yeah. It's art imitating wife. So... I rewrote that character from the first time out, so she's very different. So I had a little prompt, but it didn't need to be needed.
Well, this is why it's good for people like you and me to have partners, is so we can stay on track.
Yeah.
We don't get too out of control and wild, don't you think?
Yeah, whereas Michael Meehan says, someone's got to support the dream.
That's what Michael Meehan, the comic here in San Francisco, someone's got to support the dream. Did you hear that, honey? So can you do a little piece of the scene with your partner in it? Your so-called partner.
My so-called character. Her name is Amy, and just to set it up just a little bit, we meet her in the first act, and she is at a support group. So I'll just do a quick little thing for her.
Sure.
Hello. My name is Amy, and I don't like speaking in public groups. Makes me entirely too nervous. I've been coming here six consecutive Thursdays, but I've yet to speak. I've been listening, though, and I really appreciate everything people have had to say. It's been quite healing. I think I just like to observe. I'm not really a talker. But, well, my therapist gently suggested that I raise my hand and start participating more. So I just wanted to introduce myself. Excuse me? My week was good. My partner and I, we signed up at an adoption agency, so yeah, it's good. It's a path forward, moving on. I am excited. I'm more of a cautious person, I guess. Well, there's a lot to be cautious about. I didn't know that you don't get to pick the baby you want. They pick you, the family, and you just have to wait. It makes me feel like grade school, getting picked for a sports team. I wasn't particularly graceful child, and needless to say, I got picked last, so it's not a pleasant association, but at least there they had to pick you. The bell was going to ring. Here, no one has to pick you.
That's Julia Jackson here on Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Julia's show, Children Are Forever, All Sales Are Final, opens tomorrow night at Stageworks in the Mission District here in the city. Runs through March 22nd on Friday and Saturday nights. You can go to stageworks.org or juliajackson.com. What was it like to work with Kamau Bell?
Fantastic. Kamau and a guy named Bruce Pacman founded the solo...
Bruce Pacman, yeah.
Right, founded the solo performance workshop.
Does a lot of work at Stageworks now.
He does. He does. Mm-hmm. He does a show called Solo Sundays and produces shows. So they founded the solo performance workshop, I think, back in 2006. And I had known both Bruce and Kamau from Stand Up World.
Right.
And... had kind of been wanting to do a one-person show, but not just the strict comedy. Most comics, you know, when they think one-person show, it's just me telling jokes for, you know, an hour on HBO or something. That's not what I was interested in. I had seen Dan Rothenberg's show, Retrosexual, and just was like, this is fantastic. And so Kamau ran the workshop. And so, you know, you did like an eight-week class, and at the end of it you did a 15-20 minute piece. So that's kind of how I started, and it's ironic it's called solo performance because it's really an inherently collaborative process with the people in the workshop and with a director. Mm-hmm. So he worked on me with me on me.
He worked on you, bro.
Yeah, so
he's such a great person.
He is, and he has an excellent eye. You know, he sees things I didn't, he heard things that I didn't. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. You know, he helped really craft the first iteration of the piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now you have a director for this run, Coco Nakamoto.
Mm-hmm.
She's your director now.
Yes.
And what's that like to work with her? She's got quite an interesting resume, doing all kinds of retreats for artists of color.
Coke is fantastic. She actually was in that first workshop with Kamau. We call ourselves the charter members of the solo performance workshop, and she's a dancer by trade. And part of the reason I picked Coke is because of that. She is physical. She's in her body. She's very different than me. So, and it's more than just blocking. I'm talking about inhabiting the characters in a literal physical sense. And she picks up on that. I don't. So it's just been wonderful to have her sit there and, you know, give me feedback. And, you know, you have to know how to handle an artist. She knows how to talk to me. So she's been wonderful. She's just been wonderful.
But all artists need direction. You know, I think as a stand-up comic, you know, we don't have direction. We are on our own. And I think it's much different when you're an actor, because actors take direction. And so it's always a good thing, especially for solo plays, because you want it to be more of a play than a stand-up act.
Right.
And you want to try and conform to, you know, it being a theater piece instead of just a stand-up comedy piece.
Right. Although I think that comics have an edge in this genre, getting back to what I said earlier.
They can always find a way to make it entertaining.
Correct.
That's right.
They know, it's like being a punch-up writer. They know exactly when to put it. But the peril, the pitfall or Achilles heel, I think, for comics and solo performance is doing that emotional work, being vulnerable, you know.
Right. But in Hollywood, comics can learn to act, but actors can't learn to be funny. Just
correct.
By the way, that's a truism that they say.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you see people like Jonah Hill becoming an Academy Award winning actor because he's a funny guy who can bring that authentic performance to it, the being in the present kind of sense that you get from him.
He can. I guess what I was getting at is solo performance is 90% autobiographical.
Uh-huh, that's right.
And so to bring yourself, to be vulnerable, to be open, let's just say comics aren't exactly leading the pack in doing that work.
Yes, I agree with that.
And except for you.
Well, I don't know about that. But I do know that in terms of the zeitgeist of comedy right now, the storytelling and the authentic truth-telling stuff is what's happening.
Yes.
And that's where comedy has gone and grown and from the setup punch, which I still love. I love me some Phyllis Diller. I love me some Joan Rivers. I love jokes. Right. I wish I was better at writing them.
Yeah,
but I'm more anecdotal as well. And so... I think it's interesting. Now, you were an out comic, or you came out as a comic, or what was that like in the 90s? Or
yeah,
tell me a little bit about that.
I moved here in 93, and the first time I did stand-up here was at Josie's Juice Joint.
Which was a 10-year cabaret at 16th and Market, where there are now condos, which is all fine. Don't get all crazy, people.
Yes. So I when I moved here, I was avowedly heterosexual, and I'm chuckling. Yeah, I wasn't in the closet, and this actually has to go into the sobriety discussion. I wasn't in the closet to the extent I define that as someone who's quite clear on their sexuality and for whatever reason makes the choice not to be open about that. Mm-hmm. I did not get it, you know? And then magically, the minute I stopped drinking alcohol, poof, women appeared.
Wait a minute, you stopped drinking alcohol and you became gay?
I became willing to acknowledge, like, oh my God, I'm gay.
So was the alcohol using that as a sort of mask for that, or you didn't? You weren't even conscious of it, right?
You know, I think, you know, when I first started doing solo performance, I was really intrigued with this sort of the nature of denial. And for myself, I think it's never limited to a single subject matter. It's an entire approach to the truth. So I think I was just living a sort of toxic life altogether. And so stopping drinking was very healing, and the sexuality was like a perk, a bonus that came with it in terms of being
in touch. Was it shocking to you?
A little bit.
And then were you were being a comic then, and then all of a sudden you were like, oh, I'm a gay comic? I mean, I want to talk about this.
Yeah.
I want to talk about being gay because that's the truth, and the truth is always what sets you free and is funny.
Yeah.
Unless you can write those jokes I mentioned. Ellen.
Yeah. Well, it just became part of the act. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Was it hard for you to come out as a comic? I mean, it was very limited back in the 90s. You couldn't get booked as an openly gay comic.
No, I was already doing gay clubs anyway.
Well, you could get the gay clubs.
Duh,
but you
couldn't figure out why I felt comfortable.
You couldn't work the Punchline or Cobbs or any of that.
Yeah, I guess by the, you know, this was 2000.
Oh, 2000, it changed.
Right, 2001.
That's 3 years after Ellen.
Right, so I think it was... you know, a lot easier by that point. I think you have to have integrity about it, though. I mean, it's very easy to... You don't want to be the freak show. Like, why Dave Chappelle quit? Remember, he couldn't remember if people were laughing with him or at him.
I
want to make sure...
About him.
Yeah, that you're being true to yourself.
Well, he's just running by sycophants telling him how brilliant he is. And he was like, am I? Really?
Because
he really is. And he really didn't want to be Adam Sandler.
Right. I don't think that's possible, but okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I used to actually before I even realized I was an alcoholic either, I would feel super comfortable doing recovery show gigs. Couldn't figure it out. Why those audiences and those gigs just felt so good, so home. So now I know.
What's your take on Philip Seymour Hoffman's death?
Just like any other junkie, it's sad. It's just sad. You know, he's not better or worse than anybody else. You know, I'm not going to...
20-some years of sobriety. I mean, it must be just alarming and a reminder.
It is, to stay vigilant. You know, if you're trying to stay sober, it takes work. It takes work.
And of course, the harm reduction people were angry and upset because, and are, because they believe in, you know, safe, mm-hmm. safe shooting needle places. You know, yeah. that, in other words, he shouldn't have died if right. we had a society where we didn't judge
right.
addicts.
Right. That's that Russell Brand piece about treating
right.
it as a public health emergency, you know, instead of, it, you know, criminalizing
but,
behavior.
But I assume with your other recovered friends that mm-hmm. you're talking about that Philip's death has been one of the topics
you know,
of late.
Actually, the people that I've heard talking about it are not in recovery. But it's more just, hey, Hollywood guy died, kind of like, not him, right? Like, I think if other people had gone that we don't like, nobody would have cared.
It's never like that, though.
But it's him.
Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix. I can think of a lot of musicians I wish maybe didn't make it besides them.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I guess for him,
Amy Winehouse.
Shocked.
Really?
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Talented people. Some of the most talented, usually. Mm. Corey Monteith from Glee. Just shocking. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. I'm really looking forward to your show. Children Are Forever, All Sales Are Final is the name of Julia Jackson's show. It opens tomorrow night, February 14th, runs at Stageworks in the Mission, Friday and Saturday nights through March 22nd. Stageworks. You should check it out. You can also check her out at juliajackson.com. But it's going to be a nice long run. You're going to have weekends there,
yeah.
and it should be a pretty fun thing to do, to learn all about a biracial lesbian couple trying to adopt.
Which the city is full of.
Well, definitely in Berkeley. No, I'm just kidding.
Right here, baby.
It's such a pleasure to have you on. I really enjoyed our time.
Thank you. Me too.
Thank you, Julia Jackson, here on Out in the Bay. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, and we turned 10 years old this year. Can you believe this? But you know what? It sometimes feels like 50 or 100 or a jillion when we don't hear from you. That's right. You know what? You're our main support. Financial support comes from you, not from KLW. Sometimes we get, you know, crowdfunding going or a small grant, but most of the time we rely on you to keep us inspired and to keep the show going. So, and occasionally we raise a little money from underwriting like this. Out of the Bay is supported in part by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including those most relevant to the legitimate community, to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org/LRIS. That's sfbar.org/LRIS. Or you can call 415-989-1616. 415-989-1616. That's a little bit of money we get. But please make a tax-deductible contribution right now. It's so easy. How awesome was this radio show? Go to outinthebay.com, hit the Donate Now button. And while you're there, go to our Playing Favorites page and listen to interviews with Leslie Gore. Yep, she's gay. You should hear that interview. She's very uptight. Ang Lee, John Waters, he's hilarious. Judy Shepard, Matthew Shepard's mother, Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, and many more. Our show airs and streams Thursdays at 7 p.m. Pacific. To hear it on your phone, go to our website and download that Stitcher app. Stitcher is awesome. Thanks to the staff and management of KALW. Joanne Marr is our engineer. Thank you, Joanne. Out in the Bay is produced by Eric Jansen and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thank you for joining me.